The idea for this sermon series is really a simple one. It's taking one path over another. And so you could see in this graphic, we've got two paths diverging in the distance. And last week, we looked at God's wisdom versus conventional wisdom. And what we want to do is choose God's wisdom over conventional wisdom. And so each and every week, I'm going to pick two different roads that we can take in life and talk about how Proverbs instructs us to take the road that God has called us to. And so this week, we're going to choose contentment over restlessness. Contentment over restlessness. And there's a number of different passages in the Proverbs that speak about contentment, speak about what it means to be content with, you could say, our lot in life, or the things that God has given us and the calling that he has for us. And it's a really important concept to understand in life. And without it, I think there's all sorts of problems that develop. And with it comes gratitude and thankfulness and a sense of joy and happiness, fulfillment and the meaning that we have, knowing that we are doing what God has called us to do and we are being who God has called us to be. There was a recent survey taken, surveying millennials, which is always fun, comes with all sorts of nuggets of wisdom. But they were asked, what was their most important life goals? And what was revealed through this survey is that about 80% of them said that a major life goal of theirs was to get ridiculously rich. And another 50% said that a major life goal of theirs was to become famous. 50% wanted to become famous. And of course, you know, there's a major reason for this, because if you think about it, if I'm rich, if I'm famous, if I'm living that kind of a lavish lifestyle, well then, you know, my life's going to be incredibly meaningful and people are going to be envious of me and I'm going to be happy. And of course, we think all of those things, but in a lot of ways, it can't be further from the truth. One barometer of happiness in life suggests that wealth really has very little to nothing to do with how happy you will be with your life. And then becoming famous is actually perhaps one of the worst things that you can do. It's actually hazardous to your health to become famous. And so I digress, right? Not really two major life goals that are going to really get you all that far. But I want to talk about these two concepts, contentment and restlessness. And I could have chosen a couple of different words to kind of bring the, I guess, the antidote to contentment, and that would be, or the antithesis of contentment, and that would be unhappiness, that would be perhaps displeasure. But restlessness was one that just kind of stuck with me, because I think, particularly in our culture, we really struggle with a feeling of restlessness. But contentment is defined as this. It's a noun, of course. It's a state of happiness and satisfaction. State of happiness and satisfaction. If you were to use it in a sense, you would say, he found contentment by living a simple life in the country, right? Everybody wants to watch their potatoes grow on a nice big deck in the country. You know, the simple life, contentment. Restlessness is defined this way. It's an adjective, of course. It's of a person unable to rest or relax as a result of anxiety or boredom. Two things that I hear over and over again from people about their lives is, I'm anxious about this, that, or the other thing, or I'm just bored, right? And that's that feeling of restlessness that often marks us in these days and age. Contentment is seen as a desirable state of being, I think, for the most part. There's a side of it that's not so desirable, and that is the connotation of kind of having to settle for something in life, and we don't like that, and so we could see that as a negative. But for the most part, contentment is about being at peace, finding rest for your soul, finding satisfaction in the life that you are living. And I think that most of us would say in this room, yeah, well, I desire that. You know, I want that feeling of contentment in my life. I want to be content with who I am and where I am at in life. And likewise, restlessness, you know, it's not always seen as a negative in life. There's a season of life in which we're young and restless, right? We're trying to figure things out. We're moving to different places, trying to decide what we enjoy. We are trying different jobs. We're dating different people, right? We're in this process of forming who we are going to be. And so there is a state of restlessness in a season. But if you're in your 40s or 50s and you're restless, right, that's probably a sign of a midlife crisis, right? No one wants to be restless when they're trying to sleep at night filled with thoughts of anxiety or worries about what they're missing out on, right? We don't want to live a life of restlessness. We want to find contentment and we want to be at peace. And so the Proverbs speak to this over and over and over again. So what I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to take you through about six or seven different Proverbs. I want to talk about some of these themes within these Proverbs and just ask, you know, what does it take to live a life of contentment? What do we need to do? What do we need to realize in order to live a life of contentment? And so I want to start with Proverbs chapter 12, verse 11. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 11, it says this: those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. And then Proverbs 11, verse 3, the integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity. So what we want to do in order to find contentment in life is accept your limits. Accept your limits. A couple years ago, my son Josiah and I, really this was for him, but I wanted to do it with him. We decided to take on a 8-week athletic, what do we call it? Athletic training. Yeah, it was a training session or whatever it was a curriculum. It's called VertShock. And VertShock was guaranteed to raise your vertical leap by 6 to 8 inches in 8 weeks. Okay? At least that was for the 15-year-olds. But I watched this guy's advertisement video, and it was like I was ported back to the age of 15 or 16, like when this was actually a reasonable goal. And I was like, wow, is this true? And there was this feeling of, wow, if I could just finish this in 8 weeks, I could just work, I could dunk again at 40. Like, that would be unbelievable. Like, what an incredible thing, you know? And of course, I was like, well, hey, I'll do it with you. And it was really about, you know, keeping him accountable. And, you know, I'm doing it. My knees are hurting and my hips are just on fire. I can't even, like, stick with this program, you know, but I was gutting it out. I was sticking with it. I was doing the best that I could. And you know, we're measuring our vertical leap throughout this process. And at the end of the journey, Josiah did gain. You know, he probably gained about 3 to 4 inches on his vertical leap because it's just an unbelievable, you know, process. It's incredibly physically taxing. I lost a quarter of an inch on my vertical leap, which is probably just entropy taking place in my body, right? And it was one of those moments, right, where you kind of have to accept, you know, your status in life, right? I mean, I am a 40-year-old white guy who will never dunk ever again. And that's okay, right? And that's okay. And of course, you know, I make light of that. But, you know, we all have to learn to accept our limits. And it's a part of learning to be content in life. I love what this proverb says. It says, those who work their land. And it's this reference to limits. Because every plot of land has its limits, has its boundaries. This is what God has portioned for you. This is your land, right? And certainly, there are those of us who have a higher capacity than others. There's some of us who have a very high capacity. We could take on a whole lot of responsibility. There are others of us who maybe have a small portion or a small capacity, but one thing that we all share in common is we all have limits. We all have a limit to what we are capable of. And I think that when we are young, we say foolish things like, well, I want it all. I want it all. But the truth of the matter is, it's just blind ambition. And blind ambition can very quickly lead to greed. And greed does not stay static. it grows. It's like this giant tornado with a vortex sucking everything into its center, and it leads to all sorts of destruction. And so there are those who work their land, and they have an ample supply of food. They have provision for everything that they need in life. And having an ample supply and having all of your needs met is a good thing, right? We shouldn't despise that. Having our daily bread, having what we need for life. Don't take it for granted. I mean, there's plenty of people with all sorts of chaotic stories of, you know, putting their life savings into Bitcoin, right? And lending to all sorts of disaster, right? There's plenty of people who have not accepted the provisions that they have been given and their needs that have been met, and in pursuit of something greater, took a path that led to destruction. So can you accept the fact that you might not end up being a multimillionaire or living a lavish lifestyle like your favorite celebrity this day and age? Can you come to this place in life where you recognize, hey, I may have limits here. I may have a certain capacity, and I don't have to stop dreaming, right? But I don't want to be so restless that I can't find peace in the place where I am at today. I remember as a young man, I was 19 years old. I was playing college basketball my freshman year of college, and we had this great old gym. It's up at Edmonds, still exists today, and there was a guy who was an entrepreneur, and he came in and he refinished our floor in this special kind of flooring that was like rubber, except it was soft and pliable enough that it played like hardwood. It felt like hardwood, but it was so much better on your joints, and it was this, you know, amazing revolutionary product. And so all these NBA teams were coming in to my college to try this product out for their practice facilities. And so we got to watch, like, over 17 NBA teams came in that year to play basketball, and we got to watch their practices and just kind of be there and get their autographs and all that kind of stuff. And one of my favorite basketball players was a guy named Tim Hardaway. And at this time, he was pretty old. He was near the end of his career. And I remember after the practice one day, he was playing for the Atlanta Hawks at the time, and they had this brutally hard practice with their coach, Lenny Wilkins, who was just a hard coach, difficult to play for. And they had this grueling practice, coaches yelling at them, you know, just going to work. And I remember afterwards, we were cleaning up after the gym, and there was this giant bin filled with all of the tape that they had used just for that one practice, you know, ankles and shoulders and all sorts of things. And I remember watching Tim Hardaway come out of the gym, you know, and this guy that I just loved and looked up to, and he looked absolutely miserable. And he had like two knees filled with ice, and he was just kind of waddling out of the gym. And I was like, wow. You know, I wanted to be an NBA athlete, and I thought this was exceptional. It doesn't look all that appealing just right now in this state of being. It was this moment, you know, I just kind of recognized, you know, I always dreamt of being in the NBA. I probably am not going to get there. And not only that, but it may not have been all that it was cracked up to be in the end. I remember reading the memoir that Johnny Cash wrote, because somewhere before that or after that or right around that time in my life, I also wanted to be a rock star, right? Because I played guitar and I wrote songs, and I thought to myself, well, this is for me, right? I mean, just creative enough, just talented enough. I could be, you know, this generation's Johnny Cash. Why not? And, you know, when you're young, you have all sorts of dreams like that. But you read Johnny Cash's memoir, and it all of a sudden you kind of quickly understand that life wasn't all that is cracked up to be either, right? I mean, he was living in order to, you know, impress his father, who he could not impress, and he had all sorts of demons, a woman that he didn't love, who was his wife, and trying to pursue another woman, and getting trapped in all sorts of drugs and alcohol and all this chaos, and living a life of depression all while he was under the limelight. And man, it just, there was a reason that he was the man in black, right? I mean, there was some deep, dark demons that were haunting him. And, you know, you just, you get a peek in some of these lives, and you just kind of recognize, man, that thing that's out there that you desire, that you want, isn't always what it's cracked up to be, you know. And we all have limits, and we should all learn to accept those limits and recognize that they're placed upon us for good reason. And so we've got to learn to accept our limits and find contentment in who we are and where we are at right now by accepting our limits. Second thing Proverbs teaches us is set reasonable goals for your life. To set reasonable goals for your life kind of goes along with this idea of accepting your limits. Proverbs 13, verse 4 says this, "A sluggard's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied." I read this proverb and there was this flash of anger that swept over me because I thought to myself, this is my feeling every time I step into my house after work during the summer, because all of my teenagers are home for the summer and the house is a wreck, and I walk in and one's binging Netflix, the other is binging video games. You know, the house is a mess. They got their hand in the Cheetos. You know, they're just living life on mom and I's dime, riding mom and dad's gravy train. And so I come in, and the first thing, I start just throwing out the proverbs left and right, you know. "Go to the ant, you sluggard!" You know, and trying to stir them up into a frenzy of activity. You know, just do something. You know, walk the dog. Pick up that piece of trash that's on the floor. You can just feel my frustration, right? Do something. Clean your room. Get a job, you know. Do something. And that's my attitude. That's my feeling every time I walk into the door. And, you know, it's a season of life for them. Hopefully a season of life for me as well. But, you know, I think a lot of times for me, I read this proverb, and where it connects with me is that oftentimes, you know, I feel sluggish in my attitude towards things that I need to do when I'm overwhelmed by them. I get overwhelmed really easy by immense projects. Just the other day, I was outside in the backyard at our house, and I was realizing, you know, the railing on our deck that got warped and I need to fix it. The trim of my house needs to be repainted. There's an electrical problem with the light in my daughter's room. There are two doors that are off kilter and need fixing. My wife says, "I just need to hire Dave Stubbert." I'm like, "I just need to go on YouTube and figure it out and I'll get it all fixed," right? I can find a way to do this, but I'm so overwhelmed by the immense amount of projects that have now stacked up that I find myself being so intimidated that I can't even do one of them, right? It's so overwhelming, I can't even do one of them. And I wonder if that's the plight of the sluggard. You know, the sluggard is just sitting down thinking to himself, there's a lot of great things I could be doing, but it's so hard, I'm just going to sit here and wait it out, right? And that's the feeling that comes over me. And there's something about this idea of the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. Well, the reason the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied is because the diligent plug away, right? The diligent set reasonable goals for their lives, and they accomplish them, and they check them off the list, and then they celebrate a job well done, and then that is like momentum that leads them into the next project or the next thing that they need to accomplish. And then they get that done and they check that off the list, and all of a sudden, well, now you're rolling, right? Now things are moving in the right direction. And if you can set reasonable goals for your life, you're going to find that ultimately your diligence is going to pay off. Your diligence is going to lead you to a place where you are fully satisfied. It's a wonderful thing, right? To be a sluggard on the beach in Mexico after you've worked hard for 6 months in order to earn that vacation, right? I mean, that's a wonderful thing. That's a fulfillment of a reasonable goal that you've set, a task that you've undertaken and said, you know what, this is attainable. This is something that I can do. The Proverbs, they teach us about contentment by instructing us, set reasonable goals for your life. You know, build that momentum. Accomplish something today that you can at some point celebrate and say, okay, I could check that one off the list. I accomplished that one. It's a great way to find contentment in life is by setting reasonable goals and accomplishing them and checking them off the list along the way. Another way to find contentment in life, according to the Proverbs 14, verse 12 says, don't be led astray by the deceptiveness of subjectivity. Don't be led astray by the deceptiveness of subjectivity. And Proverbs 14, 12 says this, is a way that appears to be right, but in the end, it leads to death. And then Proverbs 16, verse 2, all a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord. Researchers at Harvard University have been undertaking this enormous research project, and it's been ongoing for over 75 years now, this research project. And what they were set out to do at the beginning, at least, was to determine what a human being needs to live a life of health, to find happiness, and to enjoy longevity. And so it's a 75-year study for that reason, because they wanted to track longevity. And the study has been going on for these 75 years over multiple generations of researchers. And it began in the early 20th century tracking some 724 young men, young boys, from the neighborhoods around Boston. And some were university students at Harvard. And they tracked all 724 of these individuals in order to determine, you know, what to find happiness. So they would interview them usually once a year, and they would ask them a bunch of questions. They would watch as they engaged in conversation with their spouse. They tracked what they did for a living, how much money they earned, all these kinds of details about their lives. And they tried to figure out what, you know, what determines happiness, and which of these individuals lives a life of contentment and finds meaning in what they do, and which of them, you know, is incredibly unhealthy and unhappy and stressed out and anxious and all these other things. And so as they've studied all these things, one of the things that they've discovered, one of the things that they've recognized very quickly is really what it all boils down to is happiness and longevity and just general health in life. It all boils down to your relationships. It boils down to the health of and the vitality of your relationships. And without those vital connections, we either lose the will to live, as some of the individuals in their study had died early, or we literally become ignorant of the things that are killing us, our unhealthy behaviors, our unhealthy lifestyles, because we don't invite others in to speak to things that we subjectively may be living into. Right? We don't invite the counsel of others. We don't respect the opinion of others. And so we struggle to change these unhealthy things about ourselves. And so it's the dynamic of a person being well advanced in age and wanting to live and be healthy in order to enjoy their grandchildren. Right? It's the dynamic of an arrogant and a conceited young man, that was certainly my story, who found a woman and fell in love and wanted to become a better man. Right? And so improved on some of those particular issues that he was dealing with. It's the young person who believed that in order to be happy, I need to make a certain amount of income, I need to live a certain lifestyle, only to fall in with a different group of friends, with a different set of standards and values in life, and discover, well, maybe wealth isn't all there is to this life. Maybe I can find happiness by living for other things, living things that maybe are more important, and maybe there's a different way to discern what is meaningful and what has value in life. But being caught up in your own mind and thoughts, it can leave you blind. It can leave you blind to unhealth in your life, things that you have decided on, ways that you have lived into that are not healthy, are not good, are not wise, are not prudent, are not things that are valued, at least by our Heavenly Father. And it's when, through relationship with others, we can submit our plans and we can submit our thoughts and then have other people speak into our lives based on those things that we are thinking, those things that we are doing, and have others judge us in a healthy way, because we all need to be judged in a healthy way. Judgment isn't always a bad thing, right? We all need to have our thoughts and our ways judged by others in order to escape subjectivity, in order to come to this place where we recognize it's not just me deciding, right? All my choices, all my actions, all the words that I speak, all these things, they have an effect on other people. So other people need to be weighing in on these things that I'm doing, these words that I'm speaking, these ways that I'm acting. That is exactly what this passage is speaking to. There's a way that seems right, but in the end, it can lead to death. And all a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord. I learned early on the importance of counsel, especially when it came to making decisions and plans as the lead pastor of our church. I quickly discovered through bad decisions and bad planning that it wasn't a good idea to strike it out on my own. Right? Anytime you're a general and you're like, charge, and you look behind you and nobody's there, right? You learn a lesson, right? You recognize being a leader doesn't mean that you strike out on your own. So I constantly am seeking counsel. I constantly am rubbing my ideas off on either Corbett or Richard or Del Irwin or some of our other leaders here at the church and just asking them, what is your wisdom on this? What do you think about this? And what if we go in this direction? What if we go in that direction? And you know, I'm constantly bringing them into these conversations and hearing ideas from other people and constantly recognize the importance of living my life in relationship with others and not living out my plans subjectively, but recognizing the need to submit those things to God and submit those things to others who God has placed in my life with wisdom. And so we're going to find contentment if we reject the deceptiveness of subjectivity. Reject the deceptiveness of subjectivity. And then finally this, we discover in the Proverbs that we must be submitted to God's plan for our lives. In order to find contentment, be submitted to God's plan for your life. Proverbs 16, verse 3 says this, commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. And Proverbs 16, 9 says, in their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. Have you ever had the experience of waking up one day filled with a sense of gratitude and just contentment over where you are at this time and this space in life? And maybe there's even a sense of, wow, I don't deserve this. Or maybe there's the sense of, you know, even in spite of all those broken dreams, all those times I didn't get my way, all those situations that went wrong, those plans that went awry, and yet, in spite of it all, I'm perfectly content where I'm at today. I mean, that is an amazing gift. And to have those moments, you've got to cherish those moments. Because I think that's what we're all after when it comes to claiming contentment over our lives, is that recognition that, wow, I am grateful because God is good and he is faithful. That's contentment. That's contentment. My wife, Deborah, she always said that she would never marry a pastor. She never wanted to become a pastor's wife. And so, you know, she grew up as a pastor's daughter. She grew up in that environment. She knew exactly what that life meant, and she wanted nothing of it. And so I was the man of her dreams for a lot of reasons, but one of which is that I didn't want to be a pastor. That wasn't in my plans. And that was how God tricked her into marrying me. Or one of the ways that God tricked her into marrying me. And so when we got married and it quickly unfolded that I was on this track, right? I don't know if it worried her or if she kind of warmed up to the idea, or maybe it was just like a frog boiling in a kettle, you know, just got hotter and hotter until she's like, well, It's just my lot in life. But God tricked her into becoming a pastor's wife, and here's what I think she would say. This is always a dangerous endeavor. That's what I think she would say, and you could speak to this with a head nod or a head shake. But I think that what she would say is that one of the things that she discovered and that she found contentment in was that in being a pastor's wife, she didn't have to do it the way that her mom does it. And we love Valerie, and she's amazing, but Valerie's a one in a million, right? The way Valerie does it is not the way that Deborah had to do it. And one of the things that Deborah discovered along the way was that she could bring her gifts and her talents and her passions to bear on what it is that she does. And she does it in her way, right? In the way that God would call her to. And it looks nothing like the definition of a pastor's wife that she had when she was saying, well, I reject that life, right? She was rejecting something that was imagination in her own mind, right? And God has this way of kind of circumventing our desires, right? To bring us to this place of, hey, you know what? It's not what you have built it up to be in your own mind. And so don't reject it. Don't throw it out of your plans because it might be the exact thing that I have called you to. Some of you got into marriage that way. You got into parenting that way. You got into the job that you're working that way. I will never be one of these. All right? This could never happen for me. And yet, you know, here you are and you wake up one day and you realize, how is it that I'm so grateful? How is it that I'm so content at the place where God has brought me in my life? And you just recognize, well, God knew better than I did, didn't he? You know, I just committed, and I love this, and I love the way that the Proverbs put this. Commit to the Lord whatever you do. You know, commit to, and I would say it this way. Commit to the Lord your whatever, and he's going to establish his plans in your life. We throw out to him our plans, our willy-nilly. This is my whatever, and you're the one that establishes the plans of my life. In their hearts, Proverbs 16 says, humans plan their course. And what do we know about the human heart? It's deceptive beyond all things. Who can know it, the scriptures say. But in their human hearts, in their hearts, humans plan their course. But the Lord establishes their steps. God, he makes these fluid plans that you and I have, and he brings that concrete setting, right? He places them in their foundation. He establishes our lives based on his calling, his perfect will. And he takes into account all the wrong directions we've taken, all the bad things that have happened to us, all the terrible decisions that we've made, and all the things that we have suffered. And he finds a way to redeem them in such a perfect and beautiful way that even in the midst of a life that was not all that well lived, we can find contentment. We can find contentment by submitting our plan for our lives to God, and by submitting, therefore, to God's plan for our lives. And so what we're going to do is we're going to choose contentment over restlessness. And to live a life of contentment, we're going to accept our limits. We're going to accept or set reasonable goals. We're not going to allow ourselves to be deceived by subjectivity. And we are going to submit to God's plan for our lives. I just want to ask if you would, as we close in prayer, just to bring these things before God. Maybe you've been restless. Maybe there's some thoughts stirring around in your heart, and maybe there's this sense of anxiety. Maybe you've reached the stage in life where you have this terrible fear of missing out. Perhaps you're in the process of making a big decision, and you're worried over exactly what is going to happen if you choose this direction over that direction. I just want to ask you to consider an attitude of contentment this morning, and just recognizing that as we submit our plans to God as we recognize that he has created us for such a time as this, as we further recognize his sovereignty and his perfect will and the way he has of redeeming us and making us into beautiful creations, that even in spite of our failures, even in spite of our weaknesses, that he can bring his plans to bear in our lives, that we would find contentment in where we are at now. And just ask that God would just speak that over our hearts, over our minds. And again, especially for those of you who are in a season of just a tumultuous season of churning, a season in which you don't know which way is up, disorienting. Just ask that God would speak to you today and that he would bless you with a word from his Holy Spirit. Let's pray.